Welcome to the UK Investor Magazine podcast, the latest on shares, markets and investments, now available on your Amazon Alexa.
Hello and welcome to the UK Investor Magazine podcast, now also available on the UK Investor Magazine mobile app. For today's podcast, we're going to be taking a broad look at portfolio allocation and construction, and we're going to be doing that in the context of the Liverpool Victoria Smooth Fund. And to do that, we're very kindly joined today by Adam Ruddle, who is the Chief Investment Officer at LV, otherwise known as the Liverpool Victoria Group. Adam, thank you very much for bringing the podcast today.
Thank you, Jonathan. Great to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
So, as I say, we're going to be focusing on one of your main strategies today, and we're going to be looking at that in the context of what's happening out there in markets and the decisions that you're making within that, Adam. But to start with, it'd be great if you could give us an introduction, first of all, to yourself, but as well as LV's wider range of services and the products that you have on offer for investors.
Patrick, well, I'm, as you say, the Chief Investment Officer of LV, responsible for investment management, investment strategy, our allocation and our optimization of over 14 billion of assets under management. I've been at LV since 2008. It was a memorable time as it was about a month before Lehman's. And before I knew it, we were deep into the global financial crisis, which absolutely had nothing to do with me, I promise. But it was a really instructive time to be working in financial services during that crisis. And I've been fortunate enough to work in many various teams at LV, including the asset and liability management area, financial reporting, actuarial valuations, equity release, capital management and with-profits propositions and oversight. So lots of great experience that I get to draw on most days in my role. Maybe, as you say, just a few words about LV. We're one of the UK's largest leading life and pensions mutual insurers, and we serve over a million customers and members. So we're really proud of our mutuality and our rich heritage. And as a mutual, we think first about our members and our customers who own the company. We think about them first in everything that we do. We offer protection policies like whole of life cover and income protection. We offer later life and pensions with propositions such as equity release and fixed term annuities. And of course, our wealth offering, where we provide access to multi-asset, low volatility investments through our with-profit smooth managed funds range of products. That includes ISAs, bonds, and pensions. And there's a wide range of products there based on customers' various risk types.
Thank you. So, of course, LV, you've got a very broad range of investments and funds and services there. But what would you say is the underlying message to investors in terms of what they can expect from an LV fund or an LV investment portfolio in terms of your approach and your construction of the portfolios?
So our investment strategies and smoothing mechanisms are designed to participate in the market, but also offer protection against certain volatility to provide robust returns, but also to show resilience against many macroeconomic conditions. That means that you can expect a globally diversified portfolio, and that's helped to cushion the impact of market volatility. Our portfolio will span public assets such as equities, bonds, and property. And more recently, over the last year, we've been leveraging the best from the world's largest asset manager, BlackRock, including the use of AI in systematic funds, some of their active fundamental strategies, and some of their cost-efficient index funds as well. And generally, we aim to outperform our benchmarks and industry benchmarks, such as the ABI mixed funds, the 40 to 85% index, which we're currently above by over 100 basis points. So working pretty well, managing that volatility through a globally diversified set of assets and also outperforming other funds generally.
Fantastic. Thank you. So as I say, we're going to focus this around the smooth managed fund, one of your leading strategies. And of course, as you said, it's a mix of fixed income and equities. And there's always the question about the balance between fixed income and equities. And I can see, looking back at the weightings over years, it does fluctuate. So it'd be good to get your view, Adam, on how you're approaching that at the moment when you're looking at equities near all-time record highs, of course, here in the UK, Europe, and the United States. But at the same time, you're looking at fixed income, yields on 10 years, up and around that 4.5%. So how are you approaching that balance at the moment, and how do you see that evolving over time?
Well, that will differ from risk type to risk type. But talking about our main fund, really, we aren't really that dogmatic on the levels of equity versus fixed income. Instead, we certainly try to think about it as a bit more risk-based. So considering the risk inherent in each asset class as well as their correlations. So, for example, as you mentioned in fixed income, that can range from government bonds to corporate bonds to high yield to emerging market debt, let alone by geography, where US Treasuries will and UK gilts will not necessarily move in the same way. So within our fixed income exposure, we look at how we've invested to those different asset classes within the asset group, and that mix of high yield to emerging market debt to government bonds to corporate bonds, etc., will define, well, how much risk are we taking in the fixed income space. Coupled to that, we then think about equities, where again there's a wide range from developed markets to emerging markets to certain thematic funds as well. We have a strong preference for equities, so generally there's a bit more of a stronger weight towards equities, but we need to balance that within the risk that we take in fixed income and the risks that we take in equities. In equities, we think we'll be benefiting from monetary policy easing and other macro factors such as AI, where we're seeing it broaden out and deepen at the same time. And Nvidia, hitting the $4 trillion US dollar capitalization level, the first company ever to do so, is certainly significant.
Fantastic. You mentioned there are a number of macro factors. When you're looking at the equity side of the portfolio, how much are you bottom-up investors compared to top-down in terms of the allocations and maybe stock selections or fund selections within the portfolio?
So we get to do both, fortunately. Within my teams, we are pretty much top down. So we'll set an investment strategy, which will decide a view on what asset classes or asset groups we want to invest in, generally where an average benchmark will be. And then the second part of the equation comes through with how we work with BlackRock, our primary asset manager, to provide that bottom-up focus, where they look at stocks and securities and indices line by line to figure out, where are the best opportunities that fit into the mandate. And as part of that, they also think about where to be tactically overweight or underweight our strategic investment strategy, our strategic asset allocation over a 1 month period. But that strong focus of us doing the top down, and BlackRock being able to be the security experts looking at each stock separately, is certainly where we find a sweet spot of delivering performance that will beat the market.
Thank you. That's a very comprehensive introduction to the strategy there. So I want to look at some more specific movements out there in markets and themes now. Now, of course, we speak to lots of managers, and looking at the biggest influences on markets so far this year, of course, it's been Donald Trump and his tariffs. But LV, as long-term investors, stringently long-term investors, how have you taken that influence on markets? What have you been doing around it, if anything, in terms of tweaking portfolios, taking advantage of opportunities and that were presented during that volatility, and how you set up going into the rest of the year when you're looking at that wider macro picture, which is being driven pretty heavily at the moment by trade tariffs?
So absolutely, we entered the year certainly, and I think nearly every year, viewing market volatility as a constant feature of investment markets. And although the reasons for it may change, that market uncertainty is perhaps the only certainty in investment markets. As you point out, markets are still trying to digest US trade policy changes. One of my peers talks about the changes as the US opening up the engine of global economic output and shoveling in some sand. And even if you try to backtrack, well, the engine's still pretty damaged, and it's unlikely to run smoothly again anytime soon. But we've made sure that we have a globally diversified portfolio, which includes investments in gold. And I know a number of your previous participants have spoken about gold. Gold has really helped us cushion the impact of market volatility. Our Smooth Managed Fund is designed to manage and cushion market volatility through our smoothing mechanisms. And just to talk a little bit about that smoothing mechanism, because I think that's quite an important point. That mechanism's been running for almost 20 years. It was launched in November 2005. So it's withstood market volatility from the global financial crisis, from the COVID crisis, from the tariff turmoil that we've been through. And in light of that activity around US tariffs, we actually reviewed our investment strategy earlier in the year to ensure that it remains fit for purpose. Generally, we look at the SAA, Strategic Asset Allocation, once a year, but where we have shocks or areas that we want to consider, we look at it more often. And so we looked at that. I think we were broadly comfortable with where we were positioned. We then look at our tactical asset allocation and determine where we aim to strengthen our market resilience and where our future investment performance, the sources of that may come through. Because again, one of our fundamental investment objectives is to ensure that our future investment performance is strong and stable. We've benefited from gold holdings, as I mentioned. We've also benefited from the surprising strength of European equities during that time and leading up to certainly in Q1. We saw the resilience of bonds in times of uncertain political and trade policies. And BlackRock, our primary asset manager, were able to utilize their expertise to select investments that were most likely to deliver good risk-adjusted returns. In reaction to those tariffs, one of the things we did was reduce our US dollar investment, our US dollar exposure. We still liked US equities and we maintained a US equity overweight, but we reduced our dollar exposure and instead increased our yen exposure. And some of that currency movements really provided some relief at the time. We also lessened our duration in the portfolio, particularly in US treasuries, where we had a little confidence in the shorter end of the curve. So those that played pretty well. But going into Q1, we were overweight in European equities, which again benefited as Europe was a surprising initial winner in Q1.
Indeed, and I think looking at the German DAX up about 20% so far this year, so a
Absolutely.
very, very good place to be in European equities. And we are going to pick up on some of those underweights and overweights a
Sure,
little bit
sure.
later on in the podcast. But of course, we've discussed the weighting between equities and fixed income. But of course, as a top-down manager, one of the biggest decisions you have is on a geographical basis, where to be positioned on that basis. We're going to pick that up. I would like to start with the UK because, of course, it's very topical at the moment. So it'd be good to get some insight in terms of your weighting towards the UK, the assets that you hold here, and how you see that playing out over time in terms of your weighting and allocation to the UK.
So generally, we're a large investor in the UK. Approximately 3.4 billion is invested in UK equities, UK bonds, UK property, and UK cash accounts. So that's about 55% of our total multi-asset portfolio. But where there's a little bit of caution is that really our first and final obligation is to deliver a high-performing business and investment return for our members. So that may mean that in times where we want to reduce our domestic bias, so reduce the amount that we invest in UK assets, we think it will be the right thing to do if we're able to find better, more resilient returns elsewhere. But we are a UK brand. We've got a strong heritage dating back to 1843, and so we want to invest in UK assets.
Thank you. So you mentioned very much overweight Europe going in to the beginning of this year. That paid off very well. But looking further afield on a geographical basis, where else are you overweight and underweight in terms of maybe emerging markets or individual geographies around the world?
And maybe I should just stress this, I can talk about it at the moment. These remain under constant review. We see them change quickly. But currently, we're overweight US equities and emerging market equities, as you mentioned. We've been overweight US equities all year. We really had to hold our nerve during the tariff turmoil. But we feel pretty vindicated where US equities are up about, I think, 26% since those lows. And we continue to see opportunities in the US and really unrivaled innovation. So whilst US exceptionalism certainly took a battering over Q1 and into April, we've seen some great outperformance that we've benefited from. Also in the US, we see that broadening out of AI, expected deregulation, fiscal loosening from the one big beautiful bill, and expected monetary policy easing. But where we are today, there are serious risks. So we are reviewing our US exposure. We are carefully reviewing some of the US economic metrics expected this week, US earnings. This is a really important week with lots of data coming through. We also like emerging markets, and part of that is we really started to see an earnings upcycle that started after 18 months of contraction. So some areas are doing very well there. I should say that we were overweight Europe. It was really beneficial over Q1, but we started to pare that back as we got into Q2. And then other areas where we're underweight, I mentioned US dollar and also treasuries. And again, that might, those are areas that we are looking to review, but at the moment, those have worked fairly well for us.
So we've touched on AI a couple of times, and of course, if you're looking at US equities, there were questions about whether there's going to be some dispersions coming into markets, or would it be that concentrated rally again? And I think the recovery that we saw from those lows in April was very much driven again by those Mag 7 stocks. But Adam, when you're looking out and you're looking at your US equity exposure, is that concentration a concern for you within those stocks? And as a manager which has a broad plethora of different asset classes at your disposal, how do you view that? How do you manage that? And are you reviewing that? And are you going to be changing your approach to US equities? And do you maybe see some more dispersion coming through into the US broad indices? Or do you still think that if you have to be in, or you want to be in, US equities, you have to be in those Mag 7 stocks?
It's a really difficult call to decide when the AI boom has stopped deepening and will start broadening out. But what we've and to make sure that we're well positioned for that, what we've done earlier this year is we added an S&P 500 equal weighted fund. You're absolutely right. At the moment, those US equities are driven by the tech stocks, and it's really those focused tech stocks that we've been overweight in. I'd say some of the Magnificent Seven, notably NVIDIA. I mean, it's up 82.2% since the lows after Liberation Day. So that is a
Incredible.
phenomenal, incredible return to come through. So it's great to have been concentrated in tech. But to your point, I think US markets will start to broaden out. When is increasingly difficult, but making sure that we've got tools like an equal weighted fund, which will, dampen the concentration risk, and help us most clearly see that broadening of AI into other parts of the market. Having that at our disposal, ready to switch into, is something that's really important. We are starting to, when we have started to move into that equal weighted fund, but we're not kind of, we haven't jumped in with both feet just yet. We still think there might be a little bit more deepening to come.
So just looking at the cash position of the strategy, Adam, going back over the last few years, it's stuck around that 1 to 2% level, which is completely understandable. But this is probably a hypothetical question, but could you see that ticking up to maybe 3 or 4%? And what situation would you see out there in markets for you to then up that weighting to cash?
So this is something that we do spend quite a bit of time thinking about, and generally, our philosophy is we like to put the cash to work. We will hold a small amount back, which reflects some liquidity management, to ensure that we can pay claims and surrenders very quickly. But also that percentage is quite important to help us look for opportunities, or when we see those tactical opportunities, we can rapidly take advantage of them. Now, where that might drift up to 3 or 4% is where we're not seeing a great return on some other asset classes, or we are expecting some tactical opportunities to very shortly become available. And so, I think in that scenario, we may let it go up to 3 or 4%. And then, of course, there's that extreme scenario where correlations across other asset classes break down and all asset classes are weak and cash becomes king again. And so in that scenario, again, we'd expect to have an increased allocation. But that's really where there'd be a sharp disruption in markets. But generally, putting cash to work is pretty important unless there are some opportunities on the horizon that we really want to take advantage of or be ready to take advantage of.
Thank you, Adam. So I'd like to drill down now because, of course, we set the scene, in terms of, allocation and different areas that you're looking at. But I think for listeners, it would be nice if we could, go a layer deeper and look at some of the vehicles that you have within the funds. Because, of course, you mentioned there you work very closely with BlackRock, but it'd be good if you'd be able to provide a bit of a flavour for the individual funds, asset classes, vehicles that actually make up your portfolio.
I mean, one of our standout success stories has been gold, which we invest using one of BlackRock's exchange-traded commodities or ETCs. So, really efficient way to invest into gold. But gold is really a 2024 idea, which stemmed from our view that whilst generally you wouldn't expect geopolitics to impact strategic investments. Going into the year, we knew there was going to be 65 countries going to the polls. And that means that whether or not there was going to be real volatility, we thought there was going to be perceived volatility around the potential for so much policy change. And so we felt gold would be a sensible hedge against potential political changes that would impact the world over 2024. It worked pretty well. We were really happy with that. Gold was up
Done
about
very well, very well. You're in all the right
27.5%.
places. You're in NVIDIA, you're in gold. You're backing the right assets here.
I think generally you always wish you had a bit more than you did have in it. These were relatively small allocations, but worked. It's these small things that work really well. But gold had a great 2024. And in fact, we thought gold may have hit its high point once the US election was passed. That was certainly our initial base case. But the new president gave us some solid reasons to remain pro-gold. And of course, we saw gold up nearly 40%. I think it was at 41.5% at its highest over 2025. Even now, even though it's gone, it's come down a bit, it's still up 26.6% year to date. On top of that great return in 2024. So, gold and our ability to access it quickly through an ETC was certainly one of the vehicles I would pick out as a great success story. I mentioned the S&P 500 Equal Weighted Fund. I think again that's something that will, a little bit different. I think it's getting a lot of more mainstream attention at present and over 2025. But being able to have those types of funds ready certainly gives some support. And then I'd probably say we're also really excited about BlackRock Systematic Funds. Those are some new funds that we use. These funds have been using AI for many years, but they use AI to provide market signals to invest in various stocks and sectors to identify opportunities. And over the last year, 18 months that we've invested in these, they've performed very strongly. And in fact, this innovation that we're seeing in stock picking is really exciting, and something that we hope to see a bit more of.
Fantastic. Thank you very much, Adam. So this is a bit of a summary question here, and I think listeners will probably know the answer to this already, but I'm going to ask it anyway, to wrap things up here. From where you're sitting as a multi-asset manager, where do you see the biggest opportunities in the year ahead?
Well, for life insurance companies, this level of uncertainty and turbulence in the market is in itself an opportunity. We're able to uniquely, I think, use the strength of our balance sheet to provide some cushioning for investors through our smooth products. So we're pretty excited about using volatility in the right way, not being terrified of it, but being able to use it to deliver some really strong returns. And around that, I've probably got to talk about private markets. And we're looking very carefully at how we can leverage BlackRock's substantial investments in infrastructure equity and private credit within our portfolios. So those private markets will be, I think, are they have been a great opportunity. I think they'll continue to be a strong opportunity as well. Perhaps finally, I think there's no getting around it, but there's a host of new problems and geopolitical concerns and policy changes around the world. But again, this creates some opportunities for innovative new propositions and solutions for investors, and we are so here for this.
Fantastic, thank you. Just as a quick note to listeners, if you'd like to know a little bit more about LV's suite of investments, do check out the notes to this podcast because there'll be a link through and you'll be able to delve a little bit deeper into some of those products that we've discussed today. So, Adam, thank you very much for being on the podcast today.
Thank you, Jonathan. Great chatting to you.
And thank you very much to everyone for listening. Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed listening to the UK Investor Magazine podcast. Please do share the podcast, and we really value any reviews and comments you leave us in your chosen podcast player. The views presented by the hosts and guests of the UK Investor Magazine podcast are in no way investment advice, and please remember all investment involves risk.